This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Before I begin, this talk is hopefully going to make its way to New Zealand, where our Sangha is sitting with Hojin Sensei. They're a day ahead of us. And so if this is successful, hello, Kiwis. So imagine a South Pacific sky, blue, long white clouds, 80 degrees. That's not where we are. The opening words of Fukan Zazengi by Master Dogen state that the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. The Buddha nature pervades the whole universe, existing here, now. I imagine that that has been as impactful, significant for practitioners hundreds and hundreds of years ago as it is for us now. Buddha nature, as a phrase, as a teaching, was not something that was prevalent in the early teachings. It was something that really came out when Buddhism went to China and clearly spoke to the practitioners of that time and has continued. The nature which is present in everyone, that is Buddha, that is enlightened mind, that is originally perfect and all-pervading, that is free of time and space and exists here and now. In every cell, in every sensation, in every thought, in every action, in every body. There's nothing apart from it. And so Dogen says, how could it be contingent upon practice and realization? How could it depend on anything? Yet, make the slightest distinction, and heaven and earth are set apart. If heaven and earth are indivisibly one, then how could they be set apart? How do you separate water from its wetness? It's clear with a little bit of practice that attachments are in the mind. When we attach to something or someone, the attachment isn't in that object, it isn't in the other person. When we speak of being attached to the past, it isn't in the past. If we're attached to the idea of enlightenment, it is to that idea. It's not to enlightenment itself. All delusions, all attachments are in the mind. And yet, as Dogen says, the true vehicle, you yourself, is self-sufficient. What need is there for special effort? Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? It's never apart from this place. What is the use of traveling around to practice? And we have traveled here to practice, to examine the dust, to let it drop away, to dedicate this week to the effort of Sesshin, of Zazen, of liturgy, of practice. How do we reconcile these two truths? Is it a matter of reconciliation? How do you reconcile two that have never been apart? That's really the precipice, you might say, of practice. As I said the other day, it's really the ground, the basis, the implication of everything. And we could say of everything in practice, because we're talking about the Dharma, but really of everything. Because remember, the Dharma is not, the creation of a way of seeing the world. The specific teachings, the way they're expressed in each time and place, are specific to that time's language and whoever's speaking. But the Dharma itself, that which we realize directly, is just the nature of things. And so what the teachings point to is true for everybody. Life is dukkha, the Buddha said. What a beginning. I mean, think about it, Come one, come all. I have something to tell you. Life is dukkha. I think maybe it's a testimony not only to the Buddha's teachings, but to our own experience that those first students didn't just run away, say, no, this isn't what I want to hear. I don't want to hear this. They already knew. The Buddha was just putting it into words. Everyone has experienced this. This hair's breadth deviation in which the gap between heaven and earth becomes apparent, and we experience that gap, the sadness, fear, anxiety, disappointment, dissatisfaction, envy, jealousy, pride. In the early teachings in the Abhidharma, there are, I believe, 52 mental factors. A catalog, a list of all of the ways we could speak about every experience, every human emotion. And so we raise a great aspiration, bodhicitta, which in Mahayana Buddhism is, in a very real sense, the most momentous occurrence in our lives. We might think that enlightenment to self is that, but really it's bodhicitta, it's the raising of bodhicitta, and it's not something that just happens in one moment, although there can be very decisive moments in our lives. Moments where that we remember where we were, what we were doing, when a certain kind of coming together or maybe a certain kind of coming apart took place, and we had a clear intuition, a sense of something that then needs to become more clear. It's the most momentous occurrence because it makes everything else possible. It's why we're here. It's what keeps us here. It's what keeps us returning, particularly in the midst of difficulties. And Sesshin is a sort of an arena for ease and joy, and also for a sort of banquet of samsara, right? Because as we sit and we turn in, and all of the activities around us drop away, what remains is what's always there. What remains is what we can put so much energy into not wanting to see. And not seeing it, of course, just means we don't see it. It doesn't mean that it has lost any power. In a certain sense, it gains power. and are not seeing it. And so it's like being under the influence of samsara without knowing, which is a somewhat dangerous situation. And so, says Shien, particularly the beginning days is very often a kind of a little bit of a feeding event on our own samsara. And samsara has a heavy tone to it because it's suffering. But remember that it's non-dual with enlightenment. And so in the same way that this tension, to speak of it this way, as long as we see it as two, this tension between you are perfect and complete, the way is all-pervading, and as soon as a hair's breadth gap appears, it's like the distance between heaven and earth. And so we practice in the same way. Samsara is what brought us here, and it is what is necessary to realize liberation. Because we can't free ourselves in the abstract. We have to become free within our not being free. We have to be liberated. We have to realize liberation from within our non-liberation. And the fact that delusion is really saying that lack of freedom, that non-liberation, is at its basis a mental energy. Doesn't to the experiencer make it any less real? And so to have deep faith in our nature, in our basic nature, in our Buddha nature, in our essentially clear and bright mind, in our ability to practice, so that when those things are under threat, you don't have Buddha nature, you're just flawed. Your mind is not inherently unhindered, it is inherently tangled. You're not very good at this. That when those doubts arise, as they do for, I'm just going to put it out there and say, everyone, I think that's a reasonably safe bet. That there is a way to practice that. You know, faith doesn't just come out of thin air. It can be a mystery that arises within us without it really making sense. Like the first time we encountered the Dharma, if you felt an immediate or a strong sense of resonance or affinity, I did. I mean, what's the basis for that? For sensing that something is true or knowing that it's true before you know it's true. I mean, that doesn't work in the logical world, in the world of 1 + 1 = 2, but it does work in the way. But there's also the faith that comes from reflection. In the moment when our seat seems isolated and small and crowded in, to find enough presence of mind to reflect on your own history. Have you ever been here before? Is any of this familiar? What have you seen? What have you learned? what do you know is going to happen at some moment if you keep applying yourself to practice? Do you think you're the only one? Has no one else ever experienced this? Is this, in fact, the universal experience? You know, I was saying to somebody earlier that we practice within the wisdom tradition of Buddha Dharma, but we could also say we practice within the human tradition of samsara. It's ancient. Why have these teachers since the beginning emphasized all of these things? Because everyone needs to know. Everyone needs to hear these teachings that speak about these very places that we get so bound in, because everyone gets bound in them. It's universal. As is Buddha nature. And I know it can be hard to have faith in your own clear, bright Buddha mind, in your own capacity to practice, when it's not seeming to go well. I know that. And I don't know it theoretically, abstractly. I know that because I've been in that spot tens, hundreds, thousands of times. And certainly times when it seems so dark and gloomy that I wasn't sure that it was going to work out. I wasn't sure that actually I had the ability to do this. I was in serious doubt as to whether Buddha nature, whatever the hell that meant to me at that time, had washed up onto these shores. I didn't know what was going to happen next. And there were plenty of moments where I had serious doubts about it working out in my favor. That's why the image of it's usually a sword, but what else do you forge in the fire? Something beautiful. Something that you make peace with. Something that is peace. That you have to put it into the fire to soften it. And then it has to be tempered. And then you put it back in the fire. It has to be tempered. Hot and cold. Dogen says, be moderate in eating and drinking. Be mindful of the swift passing of time and engage yourself in zazen as though saving your head from fire. That image, you know, it's so stark. The image being that if your head was on fire, you wouldn't ask, what should I do? Is there time for this? Is this the right thing? What if it doesn't work out? How long will it take to put this fire out? We don't ask those questions at such a moment. We just get about it. And he says that following this teaching, do not desire to become a Buddha. Let sitting or lying down drop away. Let this moment, this breath, this walking, this working, this eating, drop away. And so Dogen himself is presenting this unified whole. Buddha nature pervades the whole universe. You are never lacking. And practice as though your head's on fire. Be moderate in eating and drinking. Sort of like the advice our parent would give us, sending us off to school or on a long journey, or be safe. Remember these things. Don't forget to. Simple advice. The Tibetan master, 14th century Tibetan master Longchenpa said, "The three kinds of suffering, whereby the body, speech, and mind are all tormented, arise through the circumstance of thought and are experienced one after the other in a manner that we call delusion. How do they arise? The six consciousnesses issue forth through their corresponding sense doors toward the objects of the six gatherings. And the apprehension of these same objects results in the experience of happiness or sorrow or indifference, which are understood to exist truly." And this is expressed over and over and over and over again in the teachings for 2,500 years. A very cogent presentation of the whole thing. The whole thing. And because we hear, you know, anything that we hear over and over again, at once is because it's so important. And so it needs to be reiterated over and over again. And yet because of that, we can stop hearing it or not reflect on it. What are the ramifications? What are the implications of this? That all of everything that is suffering, that is our dis-ease, arises through the circumstance of thought, through the circumstance of thought. I mean, just think about that. That unless there are thoughts in the mind, energies that frame, describe, recognize, define, label, that that's how it arises. And that this is experienced one moment after the next, one thought after the next, in a manner that we call delusion. An umbrella term. How do they arise? The six consciousnesses within the ears, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, skin, mind, issue forth through their corresponding gates, through our eyes and ears and nose, tongue, skin, mind, and seek objects. Now, of course, this just happens when we open our eyes, when a sound occurs, when we put something in our mouth, when we touch something, when a thought arises. And because it seems to just happen, it just happens is where we need to look very, very deeply. Because it doesn't just happen. It happens very particularly. And in the apprehension of these objects, something results that we call something within the spectrum of happiness, something within the spectrum of sorrow, something within the spectrum of indifference. A summation of all of human experience. And those, in a sense, those simple words, which are not that hard to understand, is what we spend hours and days and weeks and months and years and a lifetime examining. So that we can liberate ourselves. So that we can realize our fundamental liberated mind. He also speaks about how within that in order for any of this to happen, there has to be consciousness. And then in the moment when there is perception, the first moment of perception is true. It's pure. It's just pure contact. He speaks of it as mind. And he says, but then the mental factor that discerns the features of this object, our eye consciousness, ear consciousness, and so on, that has seized upon the object, wants to understand it, wants to know. What are you? What are you to me? What am I to do with you? Are you pleasure? Are you sorrow? Are you indifference? Am I to be afraid of you? Am I to fall in love with you? The mental factor that discerns the features of this object and is continuously involved with greed, anger, and delusion. Is in this context called intellect. So he's calling intellect what happens after that pure moment of contact. And so in Zazen, in practice, what we're trying to do is sit in that totality. And to see that something is not just happening, that there isn't just sorrow. It doesn't arrive from the outside, that it's a process. It's a process. And that process results in certain experiences that define what we call our life. And that they are all conditioned. They are all changeable and changing. They are not you. And yet we take them for the self. He says, since the subject mind, your mind, arises from the object as though supported by it, they arise together, mutually dependent. In other words, there can be no awareness without the awareness of something. There can be no something without the awareness of it. And he says, since the latter, the object, arises in dependence on the former, your mind and consciousness, and since the mind and its object are related in the matter of a phenomenon and its characteristic property, consciousnesses, every way we have of experiencing the world, are said to be dependent arisings. They are dependent. And when the object and the subject come together, happiness and so on, everything else may be felt and known. Therefore, owing to their contact in the act of perception, in which the subject and object coincide, the consciousnesses are referred to as feelings. We feel something. We have a feeling of contact in the realm of pleasure or pain or indifference. And as part of that, what he calls intellect, the mind puts it in a place, puts it in a position, puts it in a historical context, places it within this, within the me, within the you. And in that, it floods with meaning. It's filled with meaning and significance. And that's what we're examining. By just sitting and being awake. Because in that, worlds shift. patterns begin to expand and soften and come apart. Dogen says, therefore, put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases. We're not going to figure it out. And learn to take the backward step that turns the light in and shines it inward. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will manifest. If you want to realize this, get to work on this now. And so Buddhism is replete. There's no shortage of teachings that explain, that lay out the landscape, such as Longchenpa has just done. And the whole point of that, of every sutra, of every teaching, whether it's a direct pointing that isn't intellectually tasty, but goes right to the heart of things, or whether it is intellectually tasty, right? You can think about it, you can reflect on it, chew on it. Regardless, all of it serves one purpose, and that is what Dogen is saying. Now, having that in your consciousness, put it aside. Don't put that in front of you like something to follow. It's already there. Let it help you by keeping it in its proper place. Now, let go of the investigation of words and phrases and take the backward step. Turn the light and shine it inward. And that takes faith. And you know, with these virtues, I spoke about this during the weekend quite a bit, you know, this importance of not practicing, not striving for perfection, not thinking in terms of absolutes. The absolute is not something you strive for. It's just the fundamental nature of things. It's not a quality. It's not a value. And so we should try not to think in terms of the things that we're practicing or cultivating in terms of absolute. So to try not to think, you know, I have to be completely sincere or have complete faith, or nothing is going to, you know, or I'm not practicing. What would that even be? We just haven't have enough faith to practice now, here. Certainly the strength or the depth or the maturity, we might say, of those qualities has an impact. Right? So if we trust a little bit, then, you know, it's like when you're not sure how cold the water is. You don't know if you want to go in. What if it's really freezing? So you just stick your toes in, check it out. So when we have a little bit of faith, maybe we tick our toes in, check it out. That's good. Toes are good. Because that's just right now. That's just now. If that's what you can do, do that. As those qualities develop, having trust, and trust born out of your own experience, especially, we will naturally, in essence, give more, which in a sense means let go more. And so it's trusting in Buddha nature, trusting in your own capacity. We already trust our intellect, right? Sort of implicitly, explicitly. We already trust that. That's why we use it so much. But to trust that which you can't measure, that which you can't just obtain, you can just obtain a thought when you go looking for one. And so to develop that faith, in a sense, we develop it through just taking steps forward, like into stillness. actually just arriving here. Just seeking is an expression of that trust. Stepping into stillness, into not thinking, into letting go. Into the possibility that there is something beyond what we can know. So Dogen says, for practicing Zen, a quiet room is good. Eat and drink moderately. Eat, drink, sleep, rest moderately. Now, we decide what moderate is going to be for the week, right? In terms of, well, I mean, in a sense, I mean, you know, food is delivered, you decide what's moderate. But you have to work within this container of your bowls. The schedule puts forward what is a moderate amount of sleep. It may be more than you used to, might be less. But it's presented as being sufficient. Sufficient within the whole. Put aside all involvements and suspend all affairs. Don't think good. Don't think about bad. Try to free ourselves of that whole paradigm. That is the way the world works. That's the way this works. Try and let that go. Don't judge true or false. Try to let go of that tyranny. What he's describing is your natural mind. We could say, he's just saying, if he's telling us, if we do this, good things are going to happen. That's not really what he's saying. What he's really saying is, this is your natural mind. Practice that mind naturally. Give up the operations of mind and intellect and consciousness. Yes, of course, those are functions of the mind. And they're very powerful, but they're limited. Stop measuring with thoughts, ideas, and views, he says. Those are very powerful, but they're limited. There are realms they don't reach. There are places they don't go. There are doors they don't open. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. How could this possibly be limited to sitting or lying down? So to really take this, these very simple, very profound, these not always easy to practice teachings to heart. They're not complicated. The instruction is very direct. But we have to practice it. We have to gain facility, resiliency, capacity, trust, familiarity. To lose our enchantment, our fascination with all of the machinations of our mind. Isn't it time for something new? And in that, at each step along the way, to not hate that mind. Because the closer we get to it, the more we see those machinations, the more we see the pain they cause. The weight, the burden, the drag, the exhaustion, the... You fill it in. And so it can turn, shift into just hating it. Get rid of this. I don't want this anymore. That's just a different kind of enchantment. And so really to be cultivating equanimity within the highs and lows, just stay on your cushion. It's not good, it's not bad, it's not true, it's not false. When those drop away, it remains clear, clean. It might be light, it might be heavy, but it's not anything more. Dogen ends the fascicle with this. Please, please, honored ones, honored followers of the way, having been long accustomed to groping for the elephant. You know, the sutra where the Buddha says four blind people are asked to discern what is this object, and each one grabs a different part of the elephant, a trunk, a tail, an ear, the torso, and each one describes that object. This is what it is. This is what it is. So Dogen says, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, don't doubt the true dragon. Don't doubt the true dragon that is you, your mind. Devote your energies to the way of direct pointing to the real. Revere the one who has gone beyond learning and is free from effort, the Buddha. Every enlightened man and woman since the time of the Buddha. Everyone around you who has liberated themselves. And you yourself. Accord with the enlightenment of all the Buddhas, succeed to the samadhi of all the ancestors. It's in you too. Continue to live in such a way, and you will be such a person. The treasure store will open of itself, and you may enjoy it freely. What a beautiful invitation. It will open of itself when we ourselves are that treasure store. We arrive as such. Every moment of practice is just, in essence, allowing that deep and ever-pervasive truth to be manifest, so that we may enjoy it freely. And so within the highs and lows, to just appreciate that these teachings that are saying over and over again, right now, this moment that you want to escape, is the moment of entry. Don't deny it. Don't paint eyebrows on it. Let it be just as it is.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.